Dayanam namaskritya naram cheva narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jayam udirayat. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 2, Chapter entitled Divinity and Divine Service, Text Number 7. Vasudeve Bhagavati,
Vasudeve Bhagavati,
Bhakti Yoga Priyojitaha,
Bhakti Yoga Priyojitaha,
Jane Atyashu Vairagyam,
Jane Atyashu Vairagyam,
Jnanam Chayato Hoitukam,
Jnanam Chayato Hoitukam,
Vasudeve,
Vasudeve,
unto Krishna,
Krishna,
Bhagavati,
Bhagavati,
unto the personality of Godhead,
Godhead.
Bhakti Yoga,
Bhakti Yoga,
contact of devotional service,
contact of devotional service,
Priyojitaha,
Priyojitaha,
being applied,
being
applied, Janayati,
Janayati,
does produce,
Ashu,
very soon,
very soon,
better late than never. When the speaker sits down, then the garland should be offered at that time. Like that. It's not respectful to the speaker if the garland is offered late. So you should be conscious of that. As soon as the speaker sits down, then the garland should be offered. That's the etiquette. Like that. Tirthapada's the only one who even noticed that the garland wasn't there. So. Good. Okay. Which word are we up to? Do we say Janayati?
Say Janayati.
Okay. Ashu,
Ashu,
very soon.
Vairagyam,
detachment.
Detachment.
Jnanam,
Jnanam,
knowledge.
Knowledge.
Cha,
cha,
and.
And.
Yat,
yat,
that which.
That which.
Ahoitukam,
Ahoitukam,
causeless.
Causeless.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. By rendering devotional service unto the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. Translation responsibly. By rendering devotional service unto the personality of Godhead.
By rendering devotional service unto the personality of Godhead.
Sri Krishna.
Sri Krishna.
One immediately acquires causeless knowledge.
One immediately acquires causeless knowledge.
And detachment from the world.
And detachment from the world.
Purport. Those who consider devotional service to the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, to be something like material, emotional affairs may argue that in the revealed scriptures, sacrifice, charity, austerity, knowledge, mystic powers, and similar other processes of transcendental realization are recommended. According to them, bhakti, or the devotional service of the Lord, is meant for those who cannot perform the high-grade activities. Generally, it is said that the bhakti cult is meant for the shudras, vaishyas, and the less intelligent women class. But that is not the actual fact. The bhakti cult is the topmost of all transcendental activities, and therefore, it is simultaneously sublime and easy. It is sublime for the pure devotees who are serious about getting in contact with the Supreme Lord, and it is easy for the neophytes who are just on the threshold of the house of bhakti. To achieve the contact of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna is a great science, and it is open for all living beings, including the shudras, vaishyas, women, and even those lower than the low-born shudras. So what to speak of the high-class men, like the qualified brahmanas and the great self-realized kings? The other high-grade activities designated as sacrifice, charity, austerity, etc. are all corollary factors following the pure and scientific bhakti cult. The principles of knowledge and detachment are two important factors on the path of transcendent realization. The whole spiritual process leads to perfect knowledge of everything material and spiritual, and the results of such perfect knowledge are that one becomes detached from material affection and becomes attached to spiritual activities. Becoming detached from material things does not mean becoming inert altogether, as men with a poor fund of knowledge think. Naishkarma means not undertaking activities that will produce good or bad effects. Negation does not mean negation of the positive. Negation of the non-essentials does not mean negation of the essential. Similarly, detachment from material forms does not mean nullifying the positive form. The bhakti cult is meant for realization of the positive form. When the positive form is realized, the negative forms are automatically eliminated. Therefore, with the development of the bhakti cult and the application of positive service to the positive form, one naturally becomes detached from inferior things. And as he becomes attached to superior things, Similarly, the bhakti cult, being the supermost occupation of the living being, leads him out of material sense enjoyment. That is the sign of a pure devotee. He is not a fool, nor is he engaged in the inferior energies, nor does he have material values. This is not possible by dry reasoning. It actually happens by the grace of the Almighty. In conclusion, one who is a pure devotee has all other good qualities, namely knowledge, detachment, etc. But one who has only knowledge or detachment is not necessarily well acquainted with the principles of the bhakti cult. Bhakti is the supermost occupation of the human being. Om Gyan Timadandasya Ginanjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swabhadantikam Vancha Kaupatu Rubyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadata Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Brinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Rama Ram Rama Hare Hare. So we're moving very quickly through the Bhagavata. Last time I gave class was 2 weeks ago, and I thought we'd still be in chapter 1 when I got here, but we're in chapter 2, so we're moving very quickly. So, as we've said previously, Srila Prabhupada says the second chapter of the first canto, which is this chapter, is so important that devotees should memorize the entire chapter. It's extremely important. There's so many key verses, including this one. This verse is extremely important in the entire Bhagavatam. These verses in this chapter, beginning from verse 12 to 20, the entire process of Shraddha to Prema will be described. And these verses are essential verses, 6, 7, 8, and 4. I mean, they're all incredibly important verses. So Prabhupada said you should learn the entire second chapter. You should know every verse here, like that. So, the first chapter began with 6 questions by the sages. Anyone remember any of the questions? We've gone over them twice, at least in my classes, so you should remember at least something. Dr. John.
What is the best activity for living entities?
Very good. What is the best activity for the living entities? Or what is the ultimate good? Shreya. Shreya means the ultimate good. In the Vedas, there is Shreyas and Prayas. Prayas means those activities which give short-term result, which means material activities. And that's what all the people in the material world at this point in time are involved in, Prayas. Short-term activities. I'll be happy today, so let's do it. I'll be happy right now, so let's do it. Don't worry if I do it and I will go to hell in my next lifetime. But I'll be happy if I do it right now, so let's do it. That's priyash. That's short term. So the Bhagavad Gita does not speak about short term activity. It speaks about shreyas. Shreyas means long term activity. So what is the ultimate good for all the living entities? And what was the other question which was asked? What was that?
What is the essence of the Vedas?
Yeah, what is the essence, the Sara, the Veda, Sara. What is the essence of the Vedas? What is the most essential thing in the Vedas? All the Vedas, if you study them, what is the most essential thing? And what is the ultimate good for everyone? If you study all the Vedas, what is the ultimate good? So these first two questions are being answered here in this second chapter. Up until verse 20. Just let me think for a minute. 20. Yeah. Actually further than 20, like that. Pretty much this chapter is answering these first two questions, like that. So, what is the ultimate good for all people? What is the ultimate good? You're all devotees. Hands up if you're a devotee. 1, 2, 3. I've got 3 devotees. 4. Nice. Okay. I'm glad to have the association of the 4 of you. So what is the ultimate good?
Sanatana.
Huh?
Sanatana.
Very good. Sanatana Dhamma. Very good. Sanatana Dhamma. No? How do we define Sanatana Dhamma?
Devotion to Krishna.
Devotion to Krishna. Okay, so how do we define that? Devotion to Krishna.
Rendering service.
What sort of service?
Devotional
service. What sort of devotional service?
Unmotivated
and?
Uninterrupted.
Ahoituki aprakihata. So the verse before this gives the definition, the Bhagavad Gita's definition of pure devotional service. What is the ultimate good for everyone? What is the essence of the Vedas? This is being answered in the previous verse. What is the ultimate good? What is the essence of all the Vedas? Savai pumsam, paro dhammo. Pumsa, what does pumsa mean? Means humans. Means humanity, means us. Hands up if you are human. Good. At least we're not devotees, but at least we're humans. At least we have to know what we are. So we are humans. So, savai pumsam. Pumsam means all humans. It means everyone on this planet. What is the ultimate good for everyone on this planet? Paradharma. Paradharma. Para means the supreme, dharma. Dharma means? Dharma. Dharma. Dharma means the essential nature of something. This is being described, Prabhupada always describes, what is the essential nature of the fire? Heat and?
Light.
Yeah. Because the fire is hot, because it is light, then we know that is fire. How do we know that is electricity?
It's hot.
It's hot and it gives light. So therefore we know that is fire. That is the transformation of fire. That is electricity. So we know everything has a constitution. So dharma means the nature of something. Paradharma means the supreme nature. Now, what is the supreme nature of the human beings? Or what is their supreme occupation or activity? What is the best thing they can do with their existence? Savai pumsam, paro dhamma. What is the best thing for everyone? The ultimate good, or what is the essence of the Vedas? What should everyone do? Paradharma. Yato bhaktiya adhoksaje. Adhoksaja means?
Transcendence.
Adhoksaja, transcendence, yeah, or Adhoksaja means that person which is beyond the material nature. Adhoksaja, it's a name for Krishna. It means that person who is beyond this material energy. Hands up if you have ever seen Krishna. Wow, pretty advanced. Where have you seen Krishna? Here in the temple. Very good. The deity is not different from Krishna. Hands up if you've ever seen the original form of Krishna. Yeah, very good. We've all seen the original form of Krishna. We just can't remember the original form. That's why Krishna appears in the deity form, to wake us up and to let us remember what he looks like. And give us an opportunity to serve him, yeah, because we've forgotten him. We've all seen Krishna, but it's been so long since we've seen him, we can't remember. So therefore Krishna reappears in the form of the deity to accept our service. The deity is non-different from Krishna. So Adhoksaja means that person who is beyond the material energy. That is Krishna, that is God. God is beyond the material energy. In other words, you won't see him in the material world very often. He does come here like that. But even when he comes here, you may not see him. He's not so easy to see. So, Krishna is Adhoksaja. Yato Bhaktiya Adhoksaja. So the only way that you can see that person who cannot be seen in the material energy is by Bhakti. So this is the essence of the Vedas. The essence of the Vedas is you must render Bhakti or devotional service in order to see Krishna. You must render what type of devotional service to see Krishna? Ahoituk. Ahoituki. Apratihata. Ahoituki means unmotivated. Hands up how often you do something which is unmotivated. Hands up how often do you do something for someone and you don't have any thought in your consciousness of having anything in return? One. Are you asking a question or are you putting your hand up?
No, I was just remembering something about
Okay, we'll speak about that later. Because I'll just...
He just asked a question, so I just remembered something.
What was it?
Have you ever done something out of condition for someone?
Yeah, that's what I'm asking. You have?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So, it's very rare. Very rare. You don't find it so much in this world. That people are doing things for others without wanting something in return. But in order to see Krishna, you have to perform Ahoituki Bhakti. Ahoituki Bhakti means you have to serve Krishna without wanting something in return. And this is a very subtle thing, that you don't want anything in return. Krishna, I'm just doing this for you because I want to serve you. I want to give you pleasure. It's a very subtle thing. When I was a few months ago, we went to the reunion for the 40th anniversary of Radha Gopinath's installation in Sydney. So when we were there, we were associating with many of Prabhupada's original disciples who helped to establish the Krishna consciousness movement in Australia. And I saw that we were on the boat cruise and everyone was taking prasadam. And some of Prabhupada's disciples, the Mataji's, they were going around and they were collecting everyone's plates after everyone had finished eating. And I could see that their service attitude was not based on anything, there was nothing in return. I could see there was a very pure, perfect service attitude which was there. In other words, not expecting something in return. When you serve someone who's a complete stranger, you do something for someone who's a complete stranger who you may never see again, and you may not have the opportunity to get any reciprocation or anything in return from that person. But you simply serve that person because you just want to give to them unmotivatedly, without any cause, without any expectation of something in return. That is pure devotional service. That is Ahoituki Bhakti. So that is the mood of the residents of Vrindavan. That is the mood of the devotees who serve Krishna. They serve Krishna with that mood that they don't want anything in return for their service. And this is what we have to practice in our devotional service. Serving Krishna only for Krishna's pleasure. Not because there's something in return. So often when we're doing our service, we're doing our service in public vision. And when we're doing our service in public vision, then we're constantly aware of what everyone else is thinking of us. Do you sometimes think, when you're doing your service, do you sometimes think, oh, everyone must be thinking I'm a really good devotee? Because I'm doing my service so nicely, and everyone must be noticing I'm doing my service very nicely. Do you ever think like that sometimes? One person? Okay, maybe it's only me. Maybe I'm the only one who thinks like this. But sometimes we think like that. We think in a material way. We have other things going in our consciousness like that. Or just like on Janmashtami. Janmashtami is a great test. Because what does Krishna say to you on Janmashtami? Krishna says, it is my birthday. So what do I want you to do? I want you to fast all day. You're not allowed to eat anything. Why does Krishna do that? Why would you do that to someone? If you have your birthday and you invite all your friends to your birthday party and you say, okay, no one's allowed to eat. Who else does that? Can you imagine inviting people to your house and saying, okay, you're not allowed to eat anything? Who else does that? Right? Krishna has a birthday party, right? Biggest party in the universe. Biggest party in Melbourne. Who else gets 6,500 people coming to their birthday? Who else in Melbourne this year had a party where 6,500 people came? Right? Maybe one or two people or something. You know, there might be someone who has some very rich or wealthy or famous person like that. But it's very rare that you'll find someone who will get that many people coming to their birthday. So everyone comes to the birthday, and what does he say to everyone? All right, you're not allowed to eat anything. And you're not allowed to drink either. You're not allowed to eat or drink. Of course, Prabhupada said if it's too much for you, then you can drink, you can have some water. He said if it's really too much, he said then you can have some fruit. Like that. Or some milk, Prabhupada said that. So, but generally, we're expected not to eat, not to drink. So you come to the party, and on top of that, all day you have to cook for me. Right. All sorts of delicious things. All the most opulent things, and you have to offer all of that to me, and you're not allowed to have any of it. Why would someone do that? Can you imagine someone coming to your house for your birthday and say, okay, you're just going to cook for me all day and I'm going to eat all day and you're just going to be here and you're going to be happy because I'm eating and I'm happy. Right? So you probably wouldn't do that for anyone else but Krishna. So we do it. And why does Krishna do that? Because Krishna is trying to teach all of us you have to become selfless. Because the rest of the year, basically, you're selfish. Basically, you just think about yourself all the time. You sit there in Bhagavatam class half the time thinking about what you're going to have for breakfast. I hope he finishes early today because I don't want to miss out on the pakoras. So we think of ourselves, basically. So Krishna is trying to teach us ahoituki bhakti. This is what the Bhagavatam is teaching. This is pure devotional service. This is how you will capture Krishna. It has to become unmotivated. So the test is there. On Janmashtami, so many things are being offered to Krishna. You're not allowed to think before they're offered to Krishna. Because sometimes we think, and it's actually an inappropriate mentality. When we're cooking for Krishna, we see the offering being made up for Krishna. And we see so many nice things, and we think, oh, that would be nice for me to eat. Oh, that's right. For me to eat later after Krishna gets it. You know, we think like that sometimes. Does anyone think like that? Sometimes. You can be honest. You can be honest. Like that. People think like that. We think, oh, after Krishna eats it, then, okay, then I can have it. I hope he is quick today. Because I'm a little hungry. And I have to make a stash, because I can't eat anything today because it's Janmashtami. But tomorrow I'm going to make a stash, and tomorrow I'm going to really eat a lot. So then we're thinking. So that's not pure devotional service. It's not pure devotional service to be thinking that I will enjoy the offering before Krishna eats it. That is not the consciousness. So Krishna, he wants to relish the offering. He wants to have the offering, but without any thought in your consciousness that it is for me. Therefore, when we do the jagya, just like on Janmashtami, Prabhu Charan was doing the jagya, and when he's doing the jagya at the end of each oblation in the fire, then he says, idam krishnaya idam na mama. Right? Everything is for Krishna, nothing is for me. Idam krishnaya, all this is for Krishna. Idam na mama, nothing is for me. Right? That is pure devotional service. You know? So that is what the Bhagavatam is teaching us. Ahoy tuki, bhakti must be ahoy tuki, apratihata. Apratihata means uninterrupted. Devotional service must be uninterrupted. Yayatma supersedati. Supersedati. Atma supersedati. For the Atma or the soul to be fully satisfied, the devotion or the bhakti must be uninterrupted. The devotional service must be uninterrupted. This is pure devotional service. Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport at the end of the Bhagavad Gita to Savadaman Parijaja Mame Kam Sharanam Vraja, the Param Shloki of the Bhagavad Gita, virtually the final verse of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's final instruction. Srila Prabhupada says, you must design your day in such a way that 24 hours a day you cannot help but think of Krishna. That's called apratihata. That means devotional service must be uninterrupted. How do we understand what it means to perform uninterrupted devotional service? You just read the Prabhupada Lilamrita. You read Prabhupada's life. And when you read Prabhupada's life, you get an understanding of what is uninterrupted devotional service. Devotional service which does not become interrupted for anything. Just like, you know, those little calendars. Every day you turn the calendar over and there's a saying by Prabhupada. There's one on the desk in the foyer, like that. So I have one at the farm. Every day you turn it over and Prabhupada gives you some special mercy. Then you turn it over and what will Prabhupada say to me today? So then, yesterday I think it was, I turned it over and I thought, what will Prabhupada say? I get up in the morning, I'll turn it over and see what will Prabhupada say today. So Prabhupada was writing a letter to, I think it was Guru Das in England in the early 70s, I think about 1970 or so. And Prabhupada said, do not be depressed. Do not be depressed, because obviously Guru Das, Prabhu had written to Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, I'm feeling depressed. So hard, I'm in England, I'm trying to spread the Krishna consciousness movement. There's hardly any devotees here. We hardly have any facility. I'm trying to do it all. Prabhupada, I'm getting depressed. It's so difficult. You must be saying something like this. Prabhupada says, do not be depressed. Devotional service is always fraught with obstacles, both internally and externally. There will always be obstacles on the path of bhakti. Prabhupada went through so many difficulties to spread this Krishna consciousness movement. But you never see Prabhupada for one day giving up his service. Prabhupada never said it's too difficult. Prabhupada never said I'm tired today. Prabhupada never said I'm mental today. Prabhupada never said I didn't get enough sweets for breakfast. Prabhupada never said, oh, I don't like that devotee, so I'm not going to go to Crossways. Prabhupada never said these things, right? Why? Because the devotional service is uninterrupted. Because he's serving Krishna. As a pure devotee serves Krishna. So Prabhupada was teaching us what is pure devotional service? What is uninterrupted devotional service? You see Prabhupada's schedule, or Bhaktivinoda Thakur's schedule. Srila Prabhupada would go to bed at 10:30 at night and get up at what time? 12:30, right? Go to bed at 10:30 and get up at 12:30. Is it possible? Is it possible? How could someone do that? How could someone sleep for 2 hours a night? How could someone get up every morning without an alarm clock? Right? If I go to bed at 10:30 and someone puts an alarm clock on at 12:30, if the alarm clock goes off at 12:30, I'll wake up and I'm like, my God, what is that? You know, what planet am I on? What is, you know, it's not impossible. One time, Prabhupada was on a train in India with Tamal Krishna Maharaj, and they went to bed. It was about 10:30. They're on the train overnight, and they went to bed. It was about 10:30, so they turned the light off. And then at 12:30, Prabhupada got up, because that's what Prabhupada did. He got up at 12:30 and started doing his translation work. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj, Prabhupada must have turned the light on. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he woke up and he saw Prabhupada was sitting up on his sleeper, on his seat in the train. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he got out of bed and he paid his obeisances and he sat up. And Prabhupada said, take rest. Prabhupada said, take rest. You know, who can get up at, go to bed at 12:30 and get up, go to bed at 10:30 and get up at 12:30? Apratihata. Apratihata means uninterrupted devotional service. Right? And then during the day, Prabhupada would rest for 1 or 2 hours during the day. He would have his massage, right, and he'd have a little rest after lunch, and that was it. So 3 or 4 hours a day, maximum rest. Rest of the time, serving Krishna. Right? And actually, Prabhupada said to Tamal Krishna Maharaj at the end of his pastimes in 1977, Srila Prabhupada said, it requires practice. To reduce your eating, to reduce your sleeping, to reduce your mating, to reduce your defending, it requires practice. Even Prabhupada himself had to practice during his life to reduce it, to cut it back, so he could serve Krishna more. That's why we do all these things. That's why on Jamashtami we don't eat. We cut everything back. Why? Because then you have more time to serve Krishna. That's why in Ekadashi we reduce our eating and sleeping, so that we can do more service for Krishna. We can do more chanting like that. That is the system. So the Bhagavatam is teaching us what is the essence of devotional service. It is, it must be uninterrupted and unmotivated. Now in this verse today, the second verse, which is the seventh verse after Savai Pumsam Paro Dhammo. Now this is another famous verse. This one gives more definition to the first verse. The first verse is defining what is pure devotional service. What is, because this is answering what is the essence of the Vedas, and what is the ultimate good for all people. Now this is, gives extra definition. Vasudevi Bhagavati. Bhagavati. Who is Bhagavan? Vasudev. Vasudev is Bhagavan. Who is Vasudev? Vasudev is the son of Vasudev. No? So it is saying that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This will be stated again in the next chapter, even more strongly. Ete chamsa kalapumsa, Krishna's to Bhagavan swayam. So Vasudeve Bhagavati, Bhakti Yoga Prayojita. Bhakti Yoga Prayojita. Rendering devotional service to Krishna. What's the next line? Jnanayat yashu vairagyam jnanam cheyam cheyad ahoitukam. Ahoituki, once again. Ahoituki means causeless. So when you render devotional service, what takes place? Two things come automatically. One is called jnana, the other one is called vairagya. These are said to be the children of Bhakti Devi. Bhakti Devi, devotion, Bhakti personified, has two sons, Jnana and Vairagya. Jnana means knowledge, and Vairagya means renunciation. When you render devotional service, these two things will manifest in your consciousness. You will become renounced. You'll develop renunciation, and you will develop transcendental knowledge. Or you will deepen your understanding about Krishna. You'll develop realizations about Krishna. So these two things begin to manifest in the character of a devotee. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya says about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Vairagya Vija Nija Bhakti Yogena. That Lord Chaitanya came to teach devotional service, which was enriched by these two points, Vairagya and Vijja. So Vairagya means that the devotees of Krishna or Lord Chaitanya, naturally their devotional service is enriched by Vairagya. What does Vairagya mean? Renunciation or detachment. Devotees are naturally detached. Why are devotees detached? Because they're attached to Krishna. And what happens when you become attached to Krishna?
Always busy.
Always busy, yeah. Krishna says in the second chapter of the Gita, chapter 2, verse 59, he says, Param Jishtva Nivartate. When you get a superior taste by rendering service to Krishna, naturally you lose your taste for material sense gratification. Devotees naturally lose their attachment to material sense gratification. It's not artificial. Devotees don't have to artificially try to lose their attachment for this material world. We don't artificially have to... we do. I mean, of course, we do certain things, which you could say separate us from the material energy. But automatically, when you render devotional service to Krishna, by that superior pleasure or that taste of rendering service to Krishna, you become detached from the material world. You don't want to go and do things in the material world. You lose your interest for the material world. So this is the process. When you render service to Krishna, you lose your attachment to other things. Why? Because in bhakti, there is a rasa. Rasa means taste or flavor or mellow. When you render service to Krishna, you taste something. Now, what is that thing that you taste? It is amrita sindhu. Bhakti ras, amrita sindhu. It is nectar. Amrita means nectar. Just like we have the charan amrita. You take the charan amrita, what does it taste like? Nectar. You just have 3 drops. Why does it say you have 3 drops? Because if you have 3 drops and you taste it, when you taste it, it's so nectar you want to drink the whole pot. That's why it says you only have 3 drops, because then everyone else can have some as well. Because it's like amrita. It is nectarian. So bhakti is like that, it is nectar. Amrita, sindhu. Sindhu means an ocean of charan amrita. Just imagine like an ocean of Varuni juice. An ocean of Varuni juice, and you can drink it. You can take from that ocean, you can drink as much as you want. That's what the spiritual world is like. In the spiritual world, there is no limitation. Just like here in the material world, we can have 5 cups of Varuni juice, and that is our limitation. Because we have material bodies. Even I'm getting older now. I had 3.5 cups this time, and it was a little challenging afterwards. Body is not as strong as it used to be. So, but I heard some of the boys had 7 or 8 cups. Very, very good. When you are young, you can do it. But in the spiritual world, there is no limitation. In the spiritual world, there is no limitation. Just like Krishna has one friend, his name is Madhu Mangala. And sometimes he becomes angry at the gopis. Because sometimes the gopis and him, they're always having some back and forth discussions. And sometimes he becomes a little bit angry. One time, there's one village just behind Varshana, where Radharani lives. And there's one village just behind there, it's the village of Chitradevi, who is one of the Ashtasakis, one of Radharani's closest friends. So Krishna and his boyfriends, the cowherd boys, they like to go and they like to jump into the window of the house, and they run into the house and they steal all the butter and the yogurt. And they eat it all. And then when they hear the gopis coming, the elder gopis, they run and they jump to the window and they jump out the window and run away. So they all jumped in. They all went and they jumped in and they're all eating. And when they heard the gopis coming, they all jumped out. And the last one to jump out was Madhu Mangala. But he had eaten so much, he had gotten a little bit bigger. So he couldn't get out the window. So all the boys were on one side, they were all pulling him. Come on. And the gopis are on the other side, and they had a big stick, and they're hitting him on the body. Like that. So he was trying to get out. So finally they got him out. And then they took him, but then he got a little bit upset. He was a little bit angry. So then later on, the gopis came, and he said, I'm not very happy with all of you. And you have to be very careful, because I am a brahmana. And if I speak a curse, then all of you will have to suffer from my curse. So they became a little bit scared. The gopis came a little bit scared. They said, no, 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 don't curse us, don't curse us. What do you want? What do you want? He said, He said, maybe you have to feed me some laddus. They said, okay, like that. How many laddus do we have to give you? He said, 1 million. You give me 1 million laddus, then I will forgive you. So then, if you go to that place, there's a little kund there called Krishna Kund, and up behind that kund there is a simhasana. There is a place, sitting place. So at that place, Madhumanga was sitting there, and the gopis fed him 1 million ladders. And you know what? He ate all of them. Just like if you offer Krishna and Radharani and Krishna are sitting together, and you offer Radharani a laddu, what does Radharani do? She picks up the laddu, and Radharani is very petite. She just takes a little bite out of the laddu, like that. Because Radharani is very refined. So if you offer Radha and Krishna, if they're sitting together, and you offer them some laddus, Radharani will take it, just take a look. But Krishna, he gets the laddu, he just goes, the whole thing, in the mouth. Because he's a cowherd boy. So he just, the whole thing. So Madhumangala, he ate 1 million laddus. Like that. This is the spiritual world. Bhakti Ras Amrita Sindhu. It is an ocean of nectar. In the spiritual world, you don't have to worry. You can have as much Varuni juice as you want. You can have as much laddus as you want. There is no limitation. So it is this higher taste which makes us detached from the material world. If you get the higher taste in Krishna consciousness, then you lose your attachment to the material world, as it says in this verse. Jnaya yashu vairagyam jnanam cheyat ahoitukam. When you do service to Krishna, automatically you become detached. That is the secret. The secret is, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, param drishtva nivartate. You get the higher taste, automatically the lower taste disappears. Of course, you have to do things on a practical level. Just like we separate the men and the women in our association. Just like the Manajis sit on one side, the Prabhu sit on one side, like that. So we don't sit like all together. That's practical. As brahmacharis or even as grihasthas, we limit our association with the opposite sex. Right? So that's practical. That means we are practicing vairagya. So sometimes you have to do vairagya, you have to do renunciation. You have to organize your life in such a way that you purposely separate yourself from the material energy or material sense gratification. Right? Devotees have to learn to do this. Therefore we practice brahmacharya. Therefore, just like sometimes myself and Gopa Vrindesh, we go swimming. So we go for a swim, we go and do some laps. So sometimes we choose the pools where the less non-devotees are there. Otherwise you go to the pool where all the non-devotees are. Right, and all the women are walking around, right, in their bikinis, like that. It's not exactly, you know, good for brahmachari life. So therefore, in order to purposely disassociate with the material energy, then you make choices. That I become renounced or detached from the material energy. So you have to do these things on a practical level. But ultimately, that is not enough. Ultimately, you will become detached from the material energy only when you get a higher taste in Krishna consciousness. That is the actual secret. When you're so absorbed in bhakti, ras, you're so absorbed in service to Krishna, and the taste or the mellow that you get from serving Krishna and remembering Krishna's pastimes, then what happens? You lose your attachment to the material energy automatically. If your mind is always thinking of the pastimes of Krishna with the gopis, and the pastimes of Krishna with Madhumangala. If you're always thinking like this in your mind, of Lord Balaram drinking Varuni juice, if you're always thinking of all these Vrindavan pastimes in your mind, then you will not think of the material energy. Even if you're in the material energy, it will not affect you. So this is actually what bhakti is about. This is what the Bhagavatam is teaching. Devotional service must be uninterrupted and it must be unmotivated. And then you will automatically develop vairagya or detachment from the material energy. When Prabhupada was in New York in 1960, I think it was 67 or 68, Prabhupada was being interviewed by one reporter. And the reporter said, do you have any material attachment? You're a Swami, because Swamis were just starting to come to America at that time. So they said, do you have any material attachment or any material desire? Prabhupada said, no. And the reporter said, how can you prove it? And Prabhupada said, because I can be in a room full of naked women and I am not affected, but you cannot. Right? How is that possible? Right? You can be in a room full of naked women, the opposite sex, right? And you're not affected in your consciousness, right? That means you are self-realized. That means you are fully Krishna conscious. Prabhupada was not affected, because in his mind, he was always thinking of Radha and Krishna. Srila Prabhupada was sitting on the Vyasasan in Los Angeles, 1968. And Prabhupada said, you think I am in Los Angeles? He said, actually, I am in Vrindavan. So Prabhupada was in Vrindavan in his consciousness. 1968, Tomal Krishna Maharaj walked into Prabhupada's room in Los Angeles with Prabhupada. And Prabhupada had little Radha Krishna deities. And the lamp, he kept the lamp on in his room. He'd been to the temple to give the lecture and he came back. And he walked into his room and the deities were on the altar and the little lamp was shining. And Prabhupada walked into the room and he said to Tomal Krishna Maharaj, he said, just look, Radha and Krishna are dancing tonight. It means Prabhupada could see Radha and Krishna are dancing. This is the spiritual world. So when your mind is in that level of Krishna consciousness, you won't be affected by the material world. You will be detached from the material world. Another time in 1968, Prabhupada cooked some laddus. And Prabhupada himself, imagine when Prabhupada, one time I asked one of the sannyasis, Umapati Swami, who was with Prabhupada back in the early days of ISKCON. And Prabhupada used to cook the Sunday feast. Right, Prabhupada would cook the Sunday feast, he would give the lecture, right, he would lead the kirtan, he would serve the feast, and when everyone was gone he would clean everything up. He was 70 years old, 71, 72, like that. That's Prabhupada. Right? That's Ahoitiki Apratiyata. Right. So I said to Umapati Swami, what was it like eating something which Prabhupada cooked? He said it was not from this world. He said it was not from this world. No. So, one time Prabhupada made a laddu and he gave it to Tomal Krishna Maharaj. He wasn't a Maharaj then, he was just a brahmachari, but he gave it to Tomal Krishna Maharaj. He said, what do you think? So Tomal Krishna Maharaj took a bite and he said, it is not from this world. And Prabhupada said, actually, this is a recipe from Mother Yashoda. Okay, so this is Prabhupada. This is ISKCON. This is Janmashtami. This is Radhashtami. This is Varuni juice. This is the Bhagavatam. This is the higher taste in Krishna consciousness. This is bhakti. Right? So if we become absorbed in this, right? We will lose our attraction to the material world automatically. The test is to become absorbed in this. Because you'll go outside and then your day will begin and then you'll start worrying about, oh, what did that devotee say about me yesterday? And what is this devotee doing to me today? And, oh, does this Mataji really want to marry me? And like that. And then all these things that go through your mind like that. And then gradually your consciousness goes away from Krishna. So you have to learn to keep your consciousness on Krishna. What does Krishna say in the Bhagavad Gita? He said, become a korma. What is a korma? A tortoise. So Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, become a tortoise. What does that mean? It means that when you're in the outside world, right, if there are things which your senses can be absorbed in, right, be like a tortoise, bring your senses back in. Just like you're in the van, you're going to Crossways. And you're going down the road, you're reading the Bhagavad Gita, right, and then you look out and there's a big billboard. Right, and there's a very beautiful woman on the billboard advertising something, right? So then what do most people do? They're driving down the road, right? They see the billboard and they see the beautiful woman, so they look. Oh, what's that about? Like that, looking at the woman, naturally. But a devotee, he becomes like a tortoise. He's reading Bhagavad Gita, he looks out the window, he sees, oh, there's the billboard. No, 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 that's going to distract me from Krishna. That will take my mind away from Krishna. And then pulls his senses back in like a tortoise. Krishna says, be like a tortoise. Stay, keep reading the Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada says, if you look back a second time, that constitutes a fall down. You've fallen down to the material energy. Now you look, and then you look away, and then you look back again. Like that. Do you ever do that? Put your hand up. Who's honest? All these guys are pure. They never do it. So, sometimes we do that. But then what happens if we do it? If you look back a second time, it creates a samskara in your consciousness. And then later on, that will come up again in your consciousness. Later in the day, or later in that week, or later in the year, or when you're chanting your japa the next day, right? Then that material impression, which that samskara on your consciousness, it enters back into your consciousness again. So how to avoid these things? Very difficult in the material world. That's why Srila Prabhupada says that once a year we should go to the holy dharma. We should go to Mayapur Vrindavan and cleanse ourselves as much as we can from all these material impressions which we get in our consciousness during the year. You go to the holy dharma. You go to Mayapur, to Puri, to Vrindavan, you cleanse your consciousness, and then you come back to the material world again, and you preach Krishna consciousness for another year. So gradually we have to overcome these material desires, and that will come ultimately by becoming attached to Krishna. And then real vairagya will develop. So we'll stop here, and we'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we discussed.
Why is there so much importance to the lotus feet of Krishna? When I was coming out today in the morning of class, I saw the brilliant woman unveiling the lotus feet. So everywhere you see Bhagavatam, they are talking about the lotus feet of Krishna. So why is it so important?
Why his feet so important? Yeah. Because when you bow down to someone's feet, that means you are surrendered to them. Because the feet is the lowest part of the body. So when you bow down to someone's feet, then you're showing that you are their servant. So in the beginning of bhakti, in the beginning of devotion, we concentrate on the lotus feet of Krishna. So it says that in the first and second canto of the Bhagavatam, the first and second canto, they represent Krishna's lotus feet. So therefore we study the first and second canto of the Bhagavatam. And we concentrate on surrendering to Krishna's lotus feet, becoming surrendered to Krishna. Prabhupada says in the second canto, he says, if you get to the end of the second canto, if you study canto 1 and canto 2, after studying canto 1 and 2, if you still have a desire for illicit sex, he said, then you should go back and start again. You should not go further into the Bhagavatam. Like that. Does that answer your question? Or?
Any other point?
Yeah, like that. Krishna's feet are said to be lotus feet. So, Charanaravinda, which means Krishna's feet are like lotus feet. So the lotus is not affected by the material energy. Or in other words, the lotus is not affected by water. Whenever water falls on the lotus flower, it turns into a bead because the lotus flower is hydrophobic. So the water turns into a bead and it just falls off automatically. So Krishna's lotus hands, his lotus feet, his lotus eyes, many of his parts of his body are described to be like a lotus, his navel, like that. It is said that Krishna is symbolic, which means that Krishna's spiritual form is never in contact with or affected by the material energy. So it's another understanding. Is that okay?
Yeah. And they're very beautiful.
Yeah. Lotus flowers are so very beautiful. And Krishna's feet, you always see the pictures, they're like pinkish. Corinthians, it's like a lotus flower. It says many parts of his body, his palms, his feet, his eyes, his navel, and I think there's some other parts of his body that compare to be like the lotus, like that. Very beautiful. Any other question or comment?
How does preaching help with
the
understanding?
How does because you are the material energy is basic, or material consciousness is basically egocentric, right? Everyone in the material world is basically here for ourselves, right? We're all mostly interested in ourselves. When you're preaching, then you're not concentrating on yourself, you're concentrating on a conditioned soul who does not know Krishna. Just like if you're distributing books and then you're trying to persuade the person to take one of the books, you're not thinking about yourself. You're not thinking, oh, you know, I didn't get enough to eat this morning. Oh, you know, the other devotee who lives in the room with me doesn't really like me that much. Oh, you know, that Manaji, she did notice when I was dancing in the kirtan this morning. You know, all the things that go through our head, right? So then when you're preaching, you're not thinking about those things. You're thinking about how to liberate that conditioned soul, which is actually what a pure devotee thinks about all the time. Srila Prabhupada was only thinking about how to liberate all of the conditioned souls. Prabhupada was thinking how to liberate all of us. Right? And if Prabhupada wasn't thinking like that, none of us would have got the opportunity to practice Krishna consciousness. So by preaching, then you become less interested in yourself. You become detached from this material world, your own material life, and you worry about the conditioned souls, which is what we actually should be worrying about anyway. That means you're on the spiritual platform, not the material. So you look at your spiritual master, right? What is your spiritual master's consciousness? He's thinking about the conditioned souls, how to liberate them from the material, and therefore he's detached from this world. That's how you take sannyas. Yeah? If anyone's interested in taking sannyas, that's how you do it. Yeah? Do you want to become a sannyasi?
I would love to.
You would love to.
I'm serious. I'm not kidding.
Then I'm serious.
I think there's something in my life now, but yeah, I have a strong tendency to do it.
Like that. So then how do you do it? You do it by preaching.
Yeah, preaching, and I go to the temple very often. I repeatedly want to, I love to go to the temple, but I miss it there for hours.
But then you're in the temple, now you have to learn to preach. This is higher. Because even when you come to the temple, you come to the temple, and why do we come to the temple? To get enthused. But then once we're enthused, then we should give that enthusiasm to others. We should give that opportunity to engage in devotional service to Krishna to other people. So devotees are interested in preaching. And that's what separates ISKCON from other movements. ISKCON is primarily focused on preaching Krishna consciousness. And when we preach, then we forget about ourselves. We become detached from the material world. You haven't got time. Basically, when you're a preacher, then you just don't even have time to think about the material energy when you're really absorbed. Like when you're organizing a big preaching program or a big Harinam or something, you don't even have time to think about because you're just so absorbed. So Prabhupada said you should mold your life in that way. Prabhupada actually said you should go to the place where they're selling Krishna anxiety and should buy as much as you can. Because when you preach, there's anxiety. Is the program going to work? Is everyone going to turn up? You know, there's so much energy to spread this movement. But you use all of your energy, you know, just concentrating on how to spread Krishna consciousness. You don't even have time to think of your material desires. And one day you wake up and you realize, oh, the material desires are not there anymore. Krishna has cleansed them all away because I've just been absorbed in his service. So. Does that answer?
One more question.
Prabhupada said you have to honor prasad. So you have to be in the consciousness when you take the prasad that this is the remnants of Krishna. So it is an offense to step over prasadam. It's an offense to move one of the buckets with your feet. It's an offense to leave prasadam on your plate. Sometimes I see devotees do this. They leave some prasadam on the plate. Even though I see, like, maybe there's only 20 grains of rice. Huh? But it's Krishna's prasadam. There should not be one grain of rice left on your plate. What is this? Consciousness. Devotees, they put it in the bin. You cannot do like that. If you waste prasadam in this life, in your next life, then that prasadam you will be deprived of. So if you waste prasad, if you put it in the bin, next life, you will go hungry. So you have to understand like that. So do not offend prasad. So you must be in that consciousness. This is Krishna's prasad. Honor the prasad. Like that. In Jagannath Puri, there are many people who are lepers. You see them. They don't have fingers and like that. It's understood in Puri, it's just understood, that they're people who have offended Jagannath's Mahaprasad in their previous life. Like that. You see, Jagannath's prasadam is non-different from Jagannath. Krishna's prasad is non-different from Krishna. So therefore we cannot offend him. So you should be in that consciousness at least. Does that help to answer?
All of our service involves throwing out a lot of prasad. All of our service involves throwing out a lot of
prasad. Crossways.
What would be the effect of that?
It means that we're doing that. We have to learn when we're cooking not to cook too much. If we're throwing out buckets and buckets every day, that means there's something wrong. It means the management is not good. There's a little bit. You're cooking for Crossways. It's 500 people, right? So then, there's half a bucket here or a bucket there, like that. Then that's acceptable because you're cooking for 500 people. It's hard to get it down to the grain, like that. So that's acceptable. But if you're throwing out too much, that means, and it's happening regularly, that means there's mismanagement taking place, and there will be reactions like that. Maybe not for you, because you're just doing your service, but for the manager, he gets reactions like that. Like that. So it should be minimized. And actually, it says in the Shastra that if there's prasad left, this prasad should be placed in a body of water, or it should be buried in the earth. These days, it's put in the garbage because there's a system, but in the old days, in the temple, they used to take the prasad down the end of Kerfet Pier and pour it into the ocean after Mangalati. Right. But then someone rang the council and said the Hare Krishnas are throwing prasad in there. So then they stopped us from doing it. But actually that's the system. It should go in a body of water, or it should be buried in the earth like that. So is that okay?
Even when you waste food in everyday life, you're insulting the food, you're insulting God. Do you think so it should be applicable in everyday life, not wasting food, instead of just wasting...
Yeah, it's prasad, it's not food. It's prasad. Food is just food, but prasad is what is offered to Krishna.
Okay.
So yeah, in your home, then you should not waste anything. If you have something on your plate, and you don't eat it, right, and then you throw that out, you'll get the reaction, you're offending Krishna. That means that you think that Krishna's remnants, which even Lord Shiva wants to get, and you're just throwing it in the bin. That's offensive. Sometimes at the farm, if we cook a little bit too much, then we take it outside and we give it to the birds, or we give it to like that. They stopped doing that here in the temple because then too many pigeons were coming and they passed through everywhere. So, but at the farm, we don't waste the prasad. We try not to waste, but if there is a little bit too much, then we give it to the birds or... like that. We make sure it gets taken. Or we put it in the compost and then all the worms eat it. Like that. So in this way it's being dealt with. It has to be respected. That's the point. Yeah, point. You have to speak.
When someone finds a book on Sankirtan, is that causeless? Is there any way we just help a stranger just for that sake of giving?
Is a pure devotional service? Book distribution?
They're
engaging in devotional service. It may not be pure devotional service, but it's definitely devotional service because they're buying the book. So if they buy a book off you on the street, then they're engaging in devotional service. But it's called Agyata Sukriti. Agyata Sukriti means they don't understand what they're doing. They just gave, you know, $15 for a Bhagavad Gita. You know, but they don't understand, oh, actually I just gave a, you know, donation for Lord Krishna, who's back in Albert Park, who's standing on the altar, who's eating the Raj Bhog, who's playing a flute. They don't understand what they're doing, but they have made advancement unknowingly. Agyata Sukriti means unknowingly they made advancement. Like that, so. Any other question or comment? Okay, Srila Prabhupada, key.